This is Dr. West Conner, founder and owner of MedicineCoach.com. For over 15 years, I've been helping people save money on their medication, balance their hormones, and live better and healthier through proper eating, exercise, and supplementation. I'm a think outside the box type of person, and I feel the traditional healthcare model is not the best solution to everyone's healthcare issues. My website, MedicineCoach.com, offers real solutions, real strategies, real answers, and the real inside information that you need to live better, stay healthy, live longer, and get more out of life. Now let's get going. This is an hour-long interview I had with Mr. America, Tom Terwilliger. Tom is the author of an incredible book, 7 Rules of Achievement. This interview is just a small portion of what you'll find in his book. You can order by visiting www.7rulesofachievement.com. It's also available for purchase on Amazon, but if you order from Tom's site, 7rulesofachievement.com, he'll send you some valuable bonus material along with your book. Let's jump right into the interview.
Let's go over some of the principles you teach your clients in both personal training and personal success. The great thing about your teachings, Tom, is that not only can they be incorporated in the gym, getting physically fit and in shape, they also can be used in all areas of life. You have a concept of body rapport. So can you tell us what that is and why is that important that we know our body?
Body rapport is a key element, number one, in all success. I firmly believe that. Now, there are those who have very little connection with their body, quadriplegics, for example, who have been successful in life regardless. But even they have a connection. There's still a message sent from the body on a cellular level, an emotional level, that allows us to, what I like to call, take that light, giant leap of faith in our life. The body rapport component is essential because as we've been taught and as we know more and more today about this in terms of brain plasticity and neural pathway connections, Candace Pert, one of my favorite writers, wrote that. She wrote a book called Your Body is Your Unconscious Mind, meaning your body stores all the emotions in every cell of the body. It helps produce the chemicals of emotions. That is the emotions of success, the emotions of stress, happiness, joy, whatever it might be. It's connected to the body. In fact, what's being taught today on the neuroscience level is really that the brain itself is just this skull-encased component, and yes, vitally important, and it controls so much of the body and receives and gives messages back and forth from the body. But the mind goes well beyond the skull-encased brain. The mind is the entire body. And I have to tell you, the body has incredible wisdom. If you learn to listen to your body and stay connected to it, then it will tell you most times when you're ready to take that leap of faith. It'll tell you if it's the right leap. When you're ready to set a goal, it'll tell you if it's the right goal, if it's the right relationship. If you learn to listen to your body, or I should say re-listen. Now, the rapport part comes from how I would define rapport. And that is to know, like, and trust. If you meet someone, it could be someone you just met for the first time, but somehow you got this kind of gut feeling, right? You know, like, and kind of trust this person almost immediately. And then on the other hand, there might be somebody you meet, or maybe you've even known for some time, you've met with them sometime, and God, you just can't get rid of this feeling that just, you know, they can't really trust this guy, or maybe I don't really, there's something about this person that I don't know, like, and trust. And again, that gut feeling is part of the body rapport. So knowing, liking, and trusting your body is key. For many people, for example, who are in this constant struggle to lose weight or to keep weight off, many times we look at our bodies almost like the enemy. You know, it doesn't cooperate with me. It's always putting on weight. Why am I genetically like this? Why do I do that? And we make the body sort of the enemy, the opposition. We're always fighting it. And to be honest with you, even as a bodybuilder, this is sort of, you know, what we were up against. As much as we were building the body, quite often the body would say, stop, I'm tired, I'm injured, you need to take a break. And we would say, screw you! Keep training, keep pushing. We push through the pain barrier, right? I know, Wes, you've experienced this. Anyone really looking to build a lot of muscle and get in great shape experiences this. Almost all professional athletes do. You would think that professional athletes have great rapport with their body. In most cases, they don't. Because what's happened is they've learned to kind of shut it off. And like a lover, you might say, who you've been, you know, shutting off for a long time, when they try and communicate with you, you're too busy, or you don't have time right now, or just, you know, I'm trying to watch this movie, whatever it might be. After a while, they stop communicating with you on that level. They'll still communicate with you, but it'll be on a much harsher level. It'll be more like the slap in the face. So body rapport is all about connecting with your body, learning to know, like, and trust your body so that you're able to listen to its subtle communications when you set a goal, when you try to achieve something, when you go to take that leap of faith, your body will tell you what's really going on. But if you're not listening, then you're not getting those messages, and you've cut yourself off from a major resource in terms of your ability to move forward in life. So that's really the essence of body rapport.
You also want your clients to be what you call brutally honest with themselves. Do you think it's difficult for some people to kind of just look inside themselves that deeply? And is it really tough to be honest with ourselves?
You know, great question. In fact, both of those questions, the body rapport question and the brutal honesty, all go to a process that I teach called the leap of faith, or experience the leap, which is a four-step process. Body rapport is the first component. You have to connect with your body, but being brutally honest with yourself is also a critical component. See, most of us aren't really honest with ourselves, and it's really interesting because when you think about that, sort of the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, I'm not being honest with myself about what I am capable of, or maybe I'm telling myself I can do something when in actuality I'm not that good, I'm fooling myself. You know, most people want to believe that we're not being honest with ourselves in a negative way, but the truth is we need to be more honest with who we really are at our core truth, and at our core, we're magnificent. Each and every one of us are magnificent. You see, there's sort of a interesting thing that happens to most people. I still feel it myself a little bit occasionally when I step up and say, I am magnificent. I'm capable of achieving anything in life. Something happens in our body based on something I call the great misconception. See, we don't want to believe that we're magnificent because, we want to believe it, but we have a hard time believing it. Instead, what we believe is this thing, this great misconception that I'm not good enough. I don't really deserve this. I'm not that talented. And the great misconception that most of us developed early on in life is based on the message that we got from our caretakers, our parents, our guardians. Let's face it, if you were, you know, ever like I was, you know, shopping with my mom, and I'm an identical twin. So my twin brother and I, you know, my mother, my God, she was already 46 when she had the two of us. She'd already had four kids, and she's dragging us through the shopping center, and we're grabbing this, grabbing that, going a little bit crazy, going, can I have this, can I have that, I want this. And my mother would say, you don't deserve that. Put it back. You're not good, or you haven't been good. And emotionally, that would resonate. You'd feel it. And you hear it enough, even though they didn't mean it on the level that we get it. If you hear it enough, we begin to believe that we weren't good enough, that we didn't deserve the toy, the candy, the prize. We didn't deserve it all by any means, that's for sure. And once we start believing that, that's the great misconception that keeps us from being brutally honest with ourselves about what we are capable of. Because the honest truth is, Wes, you, myself, everyone listening to this audio and well beyond it, is capable of things that we can't even imagine, but we don't want to believe it. So if we're truly brutally honest with ourselves, brutally honest, because there's a lot of fear with being brutally honest, there's a lot of temptation to go back, and we'll talk about that, to what is that great misconception. But if we're brutally honest with ourselves, we come to the realization that we are magnificent. Now, let me prove it to you real quick, because this is something that I guess most people on this call are thinking, well, yeah, you know, I guess I'm magnificent, but, you know, I didn't do that well in school. I never learned how to read that good, or my relationship kind of sucks, or I'm broke. Yeah, I'm magnificent. I'm broke, right? Yeah, sure. Well, let me ask you this. Who on this call would be willing to wade through or walk through a room full of newborn babies, brand new infants, and pick out the faulty ones, pick out the defective ones, pick out the ones that are less than magnificent? This one right here, this one's going to be fat. Let's get rid of this one. This one over here, that kid's going to be stupid. Get rid of this one. Would you be willing to do that? The truth is, most of us wouldn't. We would never do something like that, although it may be happening in a different way in this country. But we would never consciously do that to a newborn, because we realize they were born magnificent, regardless of whatever they might be up against in life. Wouldn't it stand to be reason that you are also magnificent? You were one of those. You were one of those infants. So at that time, you were magnificent. It's just later on in life that you begin to develop this crusty truth about yourself that you're not magnificent. You're not that great. You're not that deserving. It's bullshit. The brutal honesty is you are magnificent and capable of magnificent things. And once you really come to believe that, my God, there's nothing that can stop you. Nothing. So being brutally honest, Wes, is a critical component in your ability to move forward towards what it is that you want in your life and achieving any goal that you want, including being incredibly fit or wealthy or having a magnificent relationship. It's critical.
Now, of course, there's always going to be those temptations along the way. You know, you've got to be able to recognize those bumps in the road as they come along, you know, the injuries in the gym or going out to the all-you-can-eat buffet and all the other distractions and how you can get over them. Can you talk about that for a little bit?
To order Tom's book, visit 7rulesofachievement.com. That's 7rulesofachievement.com.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great question and a great observation, because the interesting thing is, once we've made that decision that we're going to move on, or like I like to say, you know, because the greatest change takes place when we really take that leap of faith in our life, or anytime we make a decision to change, we've got leverage over ourselves, we've had it with what's been going on in our life, it's not enough, this relationship is not serving me, it's painful now, I'm not making enough money, I'm tired of being broke, whatever the reason is for setting a goal and beginning to move forward or taking that leap of faith to change in your life, as soon as you make that decision, the temptation begins to show up. Now, temptation is something we live with all the time. We all do. I mean, if you're on a weight loss program, you know better than I do the temptation to eat. It seems like as soon as you start a diet, the desire to eat shows up, right? I mean, you're walking through, you know, a restaurant, and you're looking down at other people's plates, and you're like, oh, my God, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that. And you just, and you, all of a sudden, the juices start flowing, and it's impossible to resist at that point. Unless, of course, you've got leverage and you've learned to recognize that temptation, how it shows up. But it will always be there. Now, the temptation in the context of goal setting, of achievement, and moving forward your life in terms of change has everything to do with the temptation to go back. To go back to that old crusty truth that I talked about a few moments ago. To go back to that great misconception that you aren't good enough. You don't deserve it. And all it is a misconception. All it is the crusty truth. However, as soon as you set a goal, in fact, as soon as you even contemplate the idea of change, that's when what I like to call your dragon shows up. That's when it rears its ugly head out of its cave inside you, somewhere in your unconscious, and says, really? You're going to change? I don't think so. And it throws every obstacle it can in your way. Now, the interesting thing is temptation shows up differently for all of us. Wes, your temptation is, I'm sure, it's different than mine, and mine is different than anybody else's on this call. Although they may resemble each other. You know, for someone on a diet, the temptation to eat is similar to somebody else's. But the dragon knows how to communicate with you specifically in terms of how to whisper in your ear. Or how to shout at you if you ignore that whisper. Because you might have enough discipline. You might have enough leverage over yourself and enough desire to achieve what it is that you want. The weight loss, to get back into those old jeans, to look great on your next date. Whatever your motivation might be. The dragon knows exactly how to whisper in your ear to get you to say, I can't do that. I'm not capable of that. It knows your words. It knows your language. It knows you better than you know yourself. But if you have enough discipline based on your desire and your goal and the why for achieving it, then maybe you can resist those first few whispers, the first couple of times. But then all of a sudden the dragon begins to shout. That's when it starts to show the heat, its flames. It starts to threaten you rather than tempt you. It starts to say, if you do this, everything's going to change. You're not going to have this anymore. You're risking your home. You start that new business right now, forget it. You might lose your home. You won't be able to feed your family. Forget it, man. It's too much risk. You go up to that girl and you talk to her. Remember the last time you got rejected, how painful that felt? Freaking A, man. You want to go through that again? No. Forget it. And then it'll usually pull you back to that old crusty truth that I'm not good enough. I don't deserve this. I don't deserve to be healthy and fit and in shape and look like that. And some of us can resist that even. But if we do, then the dragon starts to really go for the jugular. It starts to attempt to burn our house down. And it's going to be there. But what you need to do is you need to identify first how your dragon shows up. What is temptation for you? And then begin to understand that you created that. That all that was being congruent with this old belief that you're not good enough. So if you're not good enough for this, whatever it is that you want, then what behavior must you engage in on a regular basis to keep you from having that? Eating, poor sexual behavior, drinking, drugs, whatever it might be, that may be your temptation. And it's conditioned you in a way that this is what you do. This is your life. In fact, it's not even temptation, Wes, until you identify it. Until you identify it, it's just your life. It's your behavior. It's your conditioned behaviors. It's what you do all the time. I mean, how many of us have said to ourselves, I don't have time for that right now. I'd like to get on a weight loss program, and I know summer's coming, but I just don't have time right now. How many times have you said that? Maybe in different ways even. You know, it's not a good time right now, or I'm busy right now. Whatever it might be, you said it again and again and again and again. It's a conditioned behavior. I call it your life. It's not even temptation until you identify it. So the first step in taming this dragon, by the way, because you can't kill it, you can't destroy it. All you can do is hope to tame it so that you can continue to move forward with enough discipline and enough wherewithal to be able to achieve your goal. So the first step in taming a dragon is to identify. How does your dragon show up for you? Does it show up as alcohol? Does it show up as food? What kind of food? What are the circumstances around it? You know, for most people that tend to overeat, we need to identify what precedes that. Because we don't just walk into a buffet. Something happens before that. What's the thought pattern? What's the process? What's the strategy for failure in that particular case? So the sooner you identify how that shows up from step number one, the thought, to the actual action of eating the food. How does it process in your mind? When you identify that, then you've begun the first step in taming that dragon. There are other steps, and we can talk a little bit about that as well. But I do write about it in the 7 Rules of Achievement, and it's a pretty powerful process in terms of overcoming that dragon, overcoming that temptation. So, yeah, the first step is to identify it, Wes. That's it, number one.
You mentioned in your answer about goals, about goal setting, achieving goals. Why are goals important, and why is it important to write them down on paper so that you can see them every day? Why is that vital?
Well, number one, the goal-setting process is vital. Now, there are those people, and we talked about a gentleman named Tom Antione, who doesn't believe in setting goals. He just believes in always bettering yourself. But even that is an unconscious process of achieving something more, a desire. I mean, goals are always in our life. I mean, you know, why are we working in the first place? Why do we, you know, toil away at a 9-to-5 job? Maybe it's to pay the bills, an unconscious goal in many respects. Maybe it's to have a couple extra bucks so we can go on a date this weekend. Maybe it's to save enough money for a car. These are all unconscious goals. So why wouldn't it be enough to just have those unconscious goals and desires in moving us forward towards what we really want, towards manifesting that magnificence that I talked about earlier as part of that leap of faith process? Well, the fact is that goal setting has been around a long, long time. You asked about writing your goal down. Let me first say this. It was interesting. I was reading an article about Arnold Schwarzenegger just recently, and I think there's certainly one thing we can all agree on this call. Even if you don't agree that you should write down your goals or set specific goals, we can all agree that Arnold Schwarzenegger is certainly one of the great achievers of our time. His story is fascinating, without question. And, I mean, for him to come from Austria, post-war Austria, serve in the military there, arrive in America, barely speaking English, and manifest what he has created is incredible. So with that said, it's been quoted that Arnold became a great believer in committing himself to goal setting, and at the same time drawing up a plan of how to execute those goals. Those are two key critical components in the achievement process. The first is setting a goal. And you ask, why write it down? Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, it becomes the first action step. I mean, it takes it from the mental obscurity of our brain and our body, and it puts it out into the universe. It puts it out into the energy of the world, and it becomes the first actual action step. Because let's face it, we all have these things that run through our mind. I'd like to do this. I'd like to do that. How many have seen a gorgeous Ferrari cruising down the street and not have a desire to maybe you're a lot different than I am, but I see a Ferrari. It's like, man, that's nice. I'd love to be driving that bad boy. Or whatever it might be, a beautiful woman, a nice-looking guy, a wealthy bank account, whatever it might be that we have these sort of desires to have in our life. But we don't necessarily say, I am going to achieve that. That's what I'm going to have. That's step number one. Step number two is saying, okay, let's make it official. I'm going to write it down. I'm going to take the first action step in creating that goal, in manifesting it in my life. I'm going to write it down. Number one, it is the first action step. Number two, it makes it real. Number three, it becomes a constant reminder. You can pin it up on the refrigerator, on your bathroom mirror. It can become a constant reminder of what it is that you intend to achieve. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. In fact, I write about a story when early on in my bodybuilding career, when I decided to make some changes, set some goals, because I wasn't going anywhere. I thought it was just going to happen, and it wasn't just happening. Instead, I was standing still, maybe even moving backwards. So I wrote down all these goals and things that I wanted to achieve, and I put them up on my mirror in the bathroom. And about 6 months later, after looking at them every single day and not being one step closer to achieving them, I tore the things down. I was in a rage. I was pissed off. I was more pissed off than I was before I wrote them. So it doesn't guarantee it by any means. It's just the first step. in making it a reality. It's a first step in committing yourself to the universe and to yourself, your own unconscious mind, that this is something you're committed to doing. This is something you will achieve. The other thing that it does do, and we'll talk about why writing goals down certainly doesn't guarantee your success, but the third component to writing down your goals, it creates what I like to call perturbation. And perturbation is pressure, basically. And I define it as even constant pressure pushing down on an object, moving it from where it is. A piece of coal, for example, under millions and millions and millions of tons of earth will ultimately be pressed into something that is unrecognizable. It certainly didn't look anything like coal once it came through the other side. It was a diamond, one of the most valuable, hardest substances on the planet. So when you write something down, you begin the first step in the perturbation process. You begin the pressure. Now it's real. Now it's written down. It's not just up here in my head anymore. Now there's pressure that begins the process of change, of changing you from a piece of coal into a diamond. So that's one of the key components there. There's something that I write about in the Seven Rules of Achievement, and I'd be happy to share it. I don't know if we have time, but I call it the Action Goals Criteria, because when we write down our goals, one of the key components is how we write it down, what kind of language are we using, and what kind of impact is it having on the universe, the energy of the universe, and our unconscious mind. Because the language that we use, not just in verbally expressing what we want to achieve, but also writing down what we want to achieve, is critical. And let me say it again, it's critical in your ability to achieve it. So I've created this formula I call the Action Goals Criteria, and it's about writing down your goals with the right language and the right energy so that you start to the momentum, start the energy towards being able to achieve it. Writing it down, though, is the first step, and those are the three things that it really achieves. It's the first action step in making it happen. It makes it visible. You're constantly reminding yourself of it, and you've created perturbation. It's real. Now you're under some pressure to achieve it.
To order Tom's book, visit sevenrulesofachievement.com. That's sevenrulesofachievement.com.
I hate to go off on a tangent here, but you mentioned Arnold and what a great story he is. And, you know, I tell people, and they laugh at me, that I think Arnold Schwarzenegger is the perfect American success story. He comes from another country, broke, $10 in his pocket. Granted, Joe Weider was supporting him and brought him over here. $10 in his pocket, didn't speak a word of English. From the story that I heard and from what I understand, he was a millionaire within a year, not from bodybuilding, but from working construction, which is what apparently all the guys did back then.
I think he did. I think he parlayed a lot of what he made. He was willing to work hard, and he parlayed what he made into real estate. He started investing early on in real estate and property. I mean, listen, he was out there in Venice Beach when nobody wanted to buy property out in those areas of California, and then started investing early. I mean, extraordinary. When most people are just thinking about survival, right? I mean, the guy was looking way ahead, man.
From, you know, the stories that I've heard and read about. He was working construction with all the other bodybuilders, and he realized that, hey, the guy paying us is making more money than we are. Well, I don't want to be the guy working. I want to be the guy paying us. So he tried to figure out, well, how can you be the guy paying us? And then once he got to that, he said, wait, this is pretty good. He bought another house, another piece of property, another house, and he was hiring the bodybuilders to do construction for him, building houses. And that's how he, to go from $10 to $1 million inside of a year, and to go from speaking no English practically to, you know, being able to communicate effectively, granted he still stumbles over the English language occasionally. But, I mean, that's just incredible. And then he said, you know, I've gone as far as I can in bodybuilding. That's my chosen field. That's what I like to do. Although he didn't need it to support himself, that's what he liked to do. And then from bodybuilding, he said, I want to be the number one movie star in the world. So he started doing that, I guess, setting his goals and having a path to follow. He becomes the number one movie star in the world. After that, he wanted to give back. Well, he can't become president because he was born outside the country. So what can he do? He wants to become governor of California. You can arguably say he's doing a good or bad job at that, but he did it. He set out for what he wanted to do, and he achieved it. So since you just mentioned Arnold in your answer, I'm going off on
him. There's always going to be critics, you know what I mean? It's the critic is the guy who looks at the person in the field who's covered with sweat and blood and dust and criticizes them, yet they're out in the field doing it. We like to criticize in this country. We really do. I love this country. I mean, there's so many things that are just magnificent about it. We embrace success, but it's interesting. We also embrace failure because I think it's part of our innate desire to think that, you know what, you know, nobody can really do it. If I can't do it, nobody can do it. And we like to see him knock down a peg or two. So, we can criticize Arnold about his governorship, but the fact is he's there. He's in the office. And hell, who knows what's next for this guy? But as I said, he became a goal setter. But more than that, he also became someone who began to plan, because you can write it down, you can paste it to your mirror, you can use the action goals criteria, you can create perturbation, and all those things start to create the energy and the momentum towards achievement. But if you don't create a plan for achieving what it is that you want, the likelihood of it coming to fruition is very unlikely. Unless you're very lucky. And if you're that lucky, you should just be heading to Vegas. But Arnold was a big planner, very big planner, as well as a goal setter.
Not to get too far off track, because my ADD will keep me going that way. So let me get back here. And as we're walking our path and getting on our way to our goals, should we tell somebody about our goals and kind of have them hold our feet to the fire, so to speak, and kind of keep us accountable? Is it good to have sort of a partner in this, or, you know, have somebody out there that we can answer to?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, that's a great question. And let me put this back at you a little bit, Wep, because I know that you've achieved some great things, including a desire to serve others through exactly what we're doing right now. I mean, why are you spending your time doing this? This isn't just for the money by any means. It's to be able to get information out and share the ability to succeed with others. True. So you've achieved a lot in your life. Has it served you? Is this something that you've done in your life in terms of sharing your goals, your dreams, and your desires with other people, perhaps just to create energy or maybe as accountability? Have you done this in your life?
Yeah, most of the people that I associate with, I guess you could say, are not, what's the word I'm looking for? They don't plan their life out like I do. They don't write mm-hmm. things down like I do. I'm very strange and very anal retentive on so many levels. It's incredible. There is no one else in the gym that I've ever seen that actually writes down their weights, their reps, their sets like I do. I very rarely see anybody in the squat rack besides me. And I'm having a hard time walking around here as I'm talking, because I actually did legs last night. I was on the hack squat machine, but there were a couple of guys in the power rack doing squats last night. Of course, nobody goes down up to parallel anymore, so they're only going down about 3/4 and thinking they're neat with 2 1/4 on the bar. But for goodness sakes, guys, at least they're in there doing it rather than doing leg extension stuff. So, you know, most people don't have a whiteboard in their office like I do with stuff scribbled on it. Most people are not. They don't think like I do, thankfully. Otherwise, the world would be really crazy. But, yes, I think that writing your goals down, having someone to hold your feet to the fire, having a spouse there with you who can support you and help guide you on your way and keep you true to yourself. If you're trying to lose weight and you want to eat chicken for dinner, well, if your wife is cooking, she's not going to cook a big 4-course meal of spaghetti, meatballs, garlic bread, because that's not going to help you. So she's going to assist you in that way and keeping your food level under control. So that's one way to do it there, especially with a spouse. Also, if you have friends that are good to support you. Christ, we've kind of reversed roles here with this question.
Well, it's good because, I mean, you're out there. Your listeners know you. They also want to know what you've done, how you've achieved what you achieved. So it's not just about what I can share, and I certainly want to share with what my experience is by all means, but I also love to hear what you've done. One of the tools and one of the ways that I've been able to achieve a relative level of greatness, certainly, you know, I don't want to be shy about saying I am magnificent, because I believe everyone's magnificent, and I haven't tapped even closely into my potential yet. No one has yet. Well, Arnold, maybe. But most of us haven't even gotten close. So, you know, one of the ways that I've been able to achieve as much as I have is by listening to others who have achieved. In fact, the book is written about the process that the great achievers go through, whether consciously or unconsciously, to achieve greatness in their life. There's a step-by-step process that people go through. So I always, whenever I get an opportunity to ask someone like yourself who's achieved so much and is sharing so much, you know, what you do, by all means, I turn the tables every time I can, man, because it's not just about what my experience is, although I'm happy to share that, and I believe it will help people. I also like to understand and get even more skills and tools from someone like yourself who have also done it. So thank you for sharing, man.
And, you know, while we're talking about me, and this is one thing, too, you know, that I say and I tell people, you know, nothing has ever come easy for me, nothing whatsoever. You know, and a lot of people were born, you know, quote unquote, poor. Well, you know, we didn't grow up dirt floor poor. But we struggled. You know, I was quite the minority in the neighborhood that I grew up in, never excelled in school whatsoever, you know, struggled through college, had to work real hard for 3 years to even get into pharmacy school, barely made it in, barely even made it through graduate school of pharmacy school, and I tried. It's not that I didn't try. And I busted my ass to get where I am. And when anybody tries to say, oh, you know, you're lucky, or, oh, well, stuff must come easy to you, No. And during this whole time, you know, I'm still in the gym, granted not as, while I was in graduate school, I wasn't in the gym as much as I was before that because you just don't have time. But like we were saying in our last conversation, you never felt adequate. I never feel adequate. I hope one day that I'll, you know, look back and say, man, I did a lot. But, you know, I've got an incredibly beautiful wife that I married way up. You know, I married way up and two great kids. And I hope one day when I look back, I think, man, you know, I did a lot. But still to this day, I still think, man, you know, there's so much more that I can do. And I'm up at 6 and I'm still working until midnight and I love what I do. And now I got to force myself to go to sleep so that I can get up again with some sleep, you know, the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think if you like what you do, you enjoy what you're doing and I enjoy helping other people and I enjoy getting the knowledge from all the experts that I'm talking with and all the audio courses that I listen to, I enjoy getting it and learning it. And if I can share it with anybody else, that's wonderful. And another thing, since we're talking about me again, I struggle. I didn't realize this till recently. I have a very difficult time reading. I don't think I'm dyslexic. I don't think I have any mental. I don't think I have any learning disability. I just either don't like to read or I don't absorb things when I read. And I didn't realize this until after college after I got out into the world and started working. I don't like it, and yet I continue to buy books and I continue to take up space on my shelf and I continue to open them, read 10, 15 pages, and it just doesn't work for me. But you give me an audio course, you give me something on CD, you give me an MP3 player. I have the MP3 player in my ear constantly, always, always learning something new, learning something else, either about success, nutrition, bodybuilding, hormones, anything. I'll take it through my ears. But reading it, that's just not me. But unfortunately, I wasn't brutally honest with myself 10 years ago when I was struggling, realizing that I'm not a good reader. I have to listen to learn. Maybe if I knew that then and I was brutally honest with myself back then, life would have been a little bit easier for me to get where I am now. You can't
well,
go,
certainly,
go
here's, right, you know, here's an observation is that, you know, I mean, all of us at one point or another, at least most of us at one point or another, in terms of early on in the educational system, ran into one form of obstacle or another. I was dyslexic. It wasn't caught early. You know, that led to what was diagnosed as learning disabilities, and I was actually put into a special ed class for years. And that's a stigma that's very difficult to overcome later on in terms of your own internal beliefs about yourself. Now, what you began to believe about yourself in terms of identifying that you had some reading difficulties, maybe you didn't identify it consciously until after college, but unconsciously perhaps, there were some things going on there that may have laid the groundwork for that great misconception that we talked about earlier. And those things can be obstacles that can keep us from completely embracing this concept of brutal honesty, embracing our own magnificence as a creation. Because you were magnificent, West, as a child. You were magnificent growing up, but there were some things along the way that, I mean, why would you believe you're less than magnificent? Why would you believe you're not good enough or not deserving? It's simple. It's programming. It's conditioning. It's nothing more. Now, the thing is, we may have created that, or it may have been created for us, but we accepted it. We created beliefs around it. We created values around it. And now it's time to identify it and change it. If you really want to change how far you can go in life, you've got to change those beliefs. That's number one. There are so many examples of beliefs changing circumstances and beliefs holding people back. This belief about yourself that you weren't good enough or not deserving enough is not uncommon. It's something that almost every one of us have experienced in one way or another. In school particularly, we're taught in a certain way. We're taught to sit down and listen. There's no stimulation. There's no accelerated learning. There's no. I mean, if you're tactile as a child, and almost all kids are, they want to touch things. They want to feel things. They want to explore. Instead, we're forced just to simply be visual and auditory. And as a child, we're not. In kindergarten, most of us did well. We got blocks. We got to play a little bit. But unless you were a child that could sit still in your chair and behave as you were instructed to behave, which is nothing more than an indoctrination into, you know, working for some corporation later on in life, then you began to develop these ideas that you weren't good enough, that you weren't smart enough. And, of course, we all believed at that age that it was just us. Nobody else, of course, was experiencing it. None of my classmates experienced what I went through, except for my identical twin brother, who was going through exactly the same thing. But even then, it was a different emotion. It was a different belief that stemmed from it. But nobody knew that everybody else was going through it. So we all developed this individual belief that became this collective belief that we're just not freaking good enough and we're not smart enough. And once we let go of that and really embrace this brutal honesty component and start to manifest what it is that we want by taking action steps. And one of the things, and we'll go back to the question you had asked about, is it important in terms of goal achievement, in terms of achieving what we want in life, to share it with others and create perhaps accountability partners? You mentioned a support system, your wife and maybe family and other friends perhaps that support you in your achievement or your desire to achieve. That's critically important as well. In fact, most people who don't achieve what they want. I have to recognize that when I wrote my goal down, put it up on the mirror, the reason I was so frustrated 6 months later is because I really didn't take any real action on it, number one. And number two, I didn't change my environment. I had the same non-supportive people in my life. I was hanging out with a bunch of bikers, for God's sake. This is not what you would call high achievers, you know? And if you're staying in the same non-supportive environment, it's very unlikely that you're going to achieve what you want because you're really up against some resistance there. So number one, in terms of creating a support system, is identify. Now, it doesn't mean you have to dump your friends. It doesn't mean you have to get rid of them, chastise them by any means. But you just have to understand that those are your friends that are non-supportive. You can be supportive of them unless it begins to drain your energy and rub off some of their energy onto you. Because let's face it, people that are victims can easily rub that energy off on us. And we don't want to start to commiserate with people that are victims. I mean, it happens all the time. We hear about it, you know, oh, yeah, you know, I lost my job. Oh, my God, you should have heard what happened to Joe. You should have heard what happened to me. You should have seen you think that's bad. Where do you hear what happened to me? It's bullshit. You're just creating negative energy that you're going to keep recycling in your life. So find people that are energized. Find people that are also achievers. Find people that will support you in creating what you want. But the real question was having an accountability partner or someone that keeps you accountable. I personally think this is critical. I think because we're all human and because we all face the temptation, we all face our dragon, and most of us are weak in many respects. Part of the weakness is the old conditioning and not believing our core magnificence, our core truth. So having an accountability partner to help keep us strong, to push us past, to remind us of our commitment is critical. In my bodybuilding career, I had it's interesting because at the time, I didn't really identify. I had two, maybe even three coaches along the way, certainly two that were incredible in terms of helping me create what I did in my bodybuilding career and winning the National Bodybuilding Championships and getting to the Olympia stage. And they both kept me accountable. They both said, you know, isn't it time for the next competition and how you doing on your diet? They saw me in the gym and I was jacking off. They'd be on me about it. Having that person that you share your goals with, your dreams with, and you can make a commitment in terms of time. Here's what I'm going to create. Here's what I'm going to do in a certain period of time. By July, I'm going to lose 20 pounds. That's it. I'm committed. Will you keep me accountable to this? Yes. So it does the other thing. Remember we talked about perturbation earlier in terms of writing your goal down. It makes it real. It starts to add pressure. Here's the next level of perturbation that will squeeze you down into that diamond so that when you get on the other side, you don't even recognize yourself. If you've got a good qualified friend, coach, mentor that will keep you accountable to your goal and will call you to the carpet when you start to slack off. Hey, what happened? It's the 1st of July. How much weight have you lost? Wait a minute, what? Okay, man, you got to get on it. Let's go. And you feel disappointment in yourself because you've let them down? Man, that's pressure. And it may be just the extra leverage you need to achieve what it is that you want. I mean, that's the essence of a really good personal trainer, a really good coach. That's what they do. They help keep goal achievers accountable to what it is they can achieve because they may recognize it even more than the goal achiever might recognize. We see other people's potential quite often more than they see their own.
So another thing about it is the difference between a need and a want. How can we determine the difference between a need versus a want?
To order Tom's book, visit 7rulesofachievement.com. That's 7rulesofachievement.com.
Wow, that's a really good question. That takes a little thought because, you know, they both show up in the same way in many respects. You know, I mentioned a Ferrari earlier. You see a Ferrari driving down the street and it's sort of something like, wow, that's nice. And you begin to imagine yourself driving that car, what it would mean, how it would feel, the chicks you'd attract, whatever it might be that motivates you. And you start to imagine that and it becomes this sort of like desire, a want, you might say. The want is not nearly as powerful as the need, however. one of the things I write about, and it's certainly, you know, common knowledge and something that's used in the coaching industry and has been for years, is what we call Maslow's pyramid, needs pyramid, human needs. And at the bottom of the pyramid is the need for basic comfort, the need for safety and security, food, water, shelter. Those are our basic needs. And once we've met those needs, once you can identify where you are in that process. Because if you're feeling stressed because you can't pay the rent, or you can't pay the mortgage, or you might lose your job, the chances are you're at the bottom of Maslow's pyramid, and you're still struggling to meet the needs. It's easy to identify those needs because you've got to do, you feel stress without them. You must have them. Those are the basics. The next level, of course, begins to move towards what we call self-actualization, which is near the top of the pyramid, which is becoming your magnificence, who you are. Self-actualizing is what your potential is and the ability to help others. But along the way, there are different needs, and you've got to meet each need accordingly before you can realize the next level. At least that's what we've been taught. That's what my personal experience is as well. The what are the things that you can live without. Could I live without a $2.5 million home? Hell yeah, I could live without that. Is it a want? Yes. But the first thing was to create and manifest everything that I needed from a safety, security, and to provide for my family's needs standpoint. The rest becomes gravy. And for the truly high achievers in life, I mean, a friend of mine, Bill Phillips, who wrote Body for Life, is near the top. In fact, he's at the top of that pyramid now. He has manifested everything that he needs and just about everything that he wants. Self-actualizing now becomes a whole nother level. At this point now, he's developed a new need, or he's been able to bring out a new need, which is the need to serve others. And I believe that's within all of us. I believe there's a need to achieve, a need to serve, and a need to lead. Achieve, serve, and lead are three things that I believe are actual human needs above and beyond the basics, above and beyond food, water, shelter, and safety and security. And once you manifest those other things that are really important, then all of a sudden you begin to realize, hey, I have a need to help others. West, I mean, you're helping others right now with these calls by putting your time and your energy. I mean, you could be doing something else. You could be watching The Simpsons right now, for God's sake, having a nice laugh with your family. Instead, you're doing something that serves others. And you're also taking your role as a leader in doing so. And you're also achieving something new, something great. So look what you've done just by doing these calls. You've achieved, you've led, and you've also exercised your need to help others. So the needs are the things that we absolutely must have in our lives that will feel pain or rejection or whatever it might be without them. The wants are the gravy. So you can identify those easily, and even by checking in with your body. Your body will tell you, depending on the level of stress, desire, happiness, whatever it is you might feel. And that's where we go back to the body rapport component. If you're not connected with your body, if you haven't been listening to it, then the feedback, the wisdom of the body may allow you to confuse needs versus wants and therefore get stuck in this quagmire of what you're trying to accomplish when, in fact, you didn't really even need that to begin with. And when you accomplish it, it may not create the satisfaction or the gratification that you had hoped it would achieve. So many people pursue things that they want and never really achieve the satisfaction of really doing something great. So it's relatively easy to identify, but it's a great, great question. Thanks for asking it, man.
I've also heard of a concept called chunking. I think Tony Robbins was the first person that I heard that concept from. Can you go over that and explain how you can use chunking in our life?
Well, chunking is definitely not a chocolate candy, although it was one of my favorites. Do you remember Chunkies when you were a kid?
Yeah. They were almost
It was like this little block, and it was wrapped in silver foil, and it had raisins and nuts and something else in there, and it was like a big hunk of chocolate. Chunking actually has been around for some time. Tony made it more popular in terms of structuring our lives, in terms of managing our times. In fact, he's got a great program called The Time of Your Life, which is all about structuring your time and chunking what it is that you want to accomplish. I mean, let's face it. If Arnold had said, the first time he arrived in America, that he was going to enter the Mr. Olympia right off the bat, without entering the Mr. Universe and the Mr. World and some of the other competitions that he had won. I heard someone said that he was Mr. America, but he was never Mr. America. He never had that title. But anyway, if he had said, I'm going to win the Olympia in 2 years and never enter another contest along the way, that could have been a big mistake. The idea of chunking is, let's break it down into something that's really simple, a weight loss goal. If someone is looking to lose 20 or 30 pounds, for example, it can be daunting for someone who's had struggles in that area in the past. If you've got a blueprint, or if you've got conditioning around having weight on or not being able to lose weight or being heavy most of your life, to lose 20, 30, 40 pounds, you know, in a short period of time is a very daunting task and can invoke a lot of fear. But the idea of losing 2 pounds this week and 2 pounds next week and 2 pounds the week after and so on and so forth until you create what it is that you want. I mean, you can lose 24 pounds in 12 weeks by chunking it down, not only into specific short-term and achievable, digestible goals, but also the actions required to achieve those goals. Because if you look at it, it's like, oh my God, I got to work out 6 days a week. I got to do, you know, I got to eat this. I got to do that. No, all you have to do is worry about today. Today you're going to work out for 20 minutes. Let's chunk it down, break it down into the smallest denominator. And once you do that, and most people, by the way, never take the time to create this type of plan for achievement. As I said earlier, Arnold Schwarzenegger was a big proponent of setting goals, but also planning for their achievement. Most great achievers will immediately start taking action in terms, what do I need to do to achieve this? Where am I in the process now? That weight loss goal, for example. If I want to lose 40 pounds and I want to get down to, let's say I want to get down to 180 pounds, wouldn't it be a good idea to know exactly where I am now? Getting down 180 pounds if I'm 190 is easy. But if I'm 260, I got to know exactly where I am. So that's part of the planning process. What resources do you have? What resources will you need along the way? There's one that's really neglected by most people, because most people will run into obstacles simply because they didn't predict far enough down the road what resources they were going to need. You know, if I want to become a banker, it might be a good idea to have an MBA. So I start this process of I'm going to be a banker. I'm going to be a banker. I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm going to be a banker. And then somewhere along the way, 3-6 months down the road, I found out, what? I've got to have an MBA to really be a successful banker? Well, frigate, screw it then. I'm not doing that. But if I realize way in advance, this is what I'm going to need to achieve this, then it becomes much easier. And you chunk down what it is that you need to achieve along the way to create massive success. I mean, even the most monumental goals can be achieved by chunking them down into smaller bite-sized pieces, digestible pieces, so that you can do this on a daily and a weekly basis. Now, let me take it just briefly one step further, because this is an important component. And Tony teaches this in his Time of Your Life program. I teach it in the 7 Rules as well, that when you start to chunk down your goal and you begin to associate it, if you begin to relate it to the bigger picture, if I want to achieve, let's say I want to climb the volcanoes in Brazil, for example, and I set a goal that I'm going to do this in 3 months, what do I need to achieve between now and then? Well, I might want to learn a little Spanish so I can communicate. I got to work on my climbing skills. I'm going to need a few bucks along the way. I'm going to need to do this, this, and this. I'm going to need to lose 10 pounds to make it happen. But all those little things can also be a little daunting. It's like, God, I got to do this. I got to do this. I got to do this. But it becomes easy. Those little daily actions become easy when it's part of a bigger picture. When the goal of climbing those volcanoes is related to something even bigger. It's related to my desire to achieve, to manifest my magnificence. By climbing those volcanoes, I'll feel this. I'll have this experience. I'll be able to write about it. I'll be able to share it with others. It becomes a bigger picture of even the main desire, the main goal of climbing those volcanoes becomes a bigger component of something more, something perhaps even beyond yourself. And then each one of those chunks, the daily, the weekly, the monthly tasks that need to be done to achieve it, become part of it. They become connected. They're not disconnected from it. Like, oh, God, I got to go to the gym? Yes. And it's completely connected to the ultimate goal and the emotions and the feeling that I'm going to achieve from accomplishing that. I highly recommend in your planning process, in terms of achieving your goals, is to begin to chunk them down. And in the book, The 7 Rules of Achievement, I have a chunking process that makes it extremely easy to do that. By separating all the things, decide what it is that you're going to need to do. What resources are you going to need? And begin to separate those into categories and then what you're going to do on a daily basis. It becomes a relatively easy process. And once you get into the habit of doing it, man, all of a sudden, when somebody says, you know what we're going to do? We're going to start this business and we're going to make $3 billion in 3 years by starting this business. Now, what? Instead of being like overwhelmed by it, you say, wow, okay, let's start to break it down. You've gotten into the habits, you set goals, you plan for them, you chunk it down, and even the most monumental goals are achievable.
I guess it just goes back to the old question, how do you eat an elephant?
You know what? All that long-winded talk, and I could have said that right there. One bite at a time. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. That's great, man.
We seem to be kind of Schwarzenegger-specific here on this call, but anyway, I remember reading about Arnold again, visualizing his biceps as the size of mounds when he would train them, and golfers, you know, they see in their mind's eye the ball going in the hole, even before they hit it. And I remember hearing about university studies that compared basketball players, you know, those that would just sit down and close their eyes and visualize making the free throw shot compared to those who actually went out there and physically took the shot and practiced. And at the end of the study, there's really no significant difference between the two groups. So why is visualization or seeing your success before you achieve it so important in your life?
To order Tom's book, visit 7rulesofachievement.com. That's 7rulesofachievement.com.
Wow. I mean, I got another great question in terms of visualization. Visualizing the outcome is really critical. I mean, you know, from my own experience in terms of visualizing what I want, goes back to, you know, the early childhood days of using your imagination. When you were a child, you know, when I was, I had a vivid imagination. I could imagine being anything, really, a cowboy, an Indian. I never imagined being a nurse, but there are those that have made successful careers of it because they imagine themselves doing that. I mean, your imagination is something that is incredibly powerful. And what's really neat about it is that once you start to use your imagination, your ability to visualize what you want, particularly the outcome of what you want, because sometimes we get this idea that I have to see myself, you know, winning the contest. Well, maybe there's something more powerful for you. Might be after winning that contest. What takes place at that point? What are the feelings? What are the emotions that are going on? The ability to use your imagination in not just visualizing, but creating what I call an internal representation of what it is that you want, what it is that you desire. For some, I teach this process, and it's called the internal representation process, where we really get down into the crux of what someone needs to see, experience, hear, feel, to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they have achieved their goal. And for some, it's not about, you know, going in and cashing a check or walking to the bookstore and seeing their book on the shelf. For some, it's simply about waking up in the morning in the environment that you've created as a result of achieving this goal, lying next to your soulmate. What goes on in your body? What do you feel when you sit up in your bed and you take a deep breath and you look around and you see this environment and you know what you've achieved? You know the life that waits for you that day, the feeling that comes with it. This is post-achieving what you want. It might be 6 months, it might be a month, it might be a week, a day after what it is that you achieved has now manifested into your life. And for many, that's the most powerful component in terms of achieving what we want. But the ability to visualize what it is that we want is critical because it also begins the unconscious programming of moving towards that goal, moving towards what it is that we want. There's what Maxwell Maltz wrote about in his book, Psycho-Cybernetics. He wrote about this thing he calls the unconscious success mechanism, being like a servo mechanism. And a servo mechanism is like a thermostat, for example, is a servo mechanism. And what it is, basically, is something that corrects the performance of the machine or the mechanism based on constant feedback. A thermostat, for example, will adjust the temperature in the room. If you've got it set up for 72 degrees and it gets a little chilly in the room, then the heat will kick on. If it gets a little hot in the room, the air conditioner will kick on to keep it at a consistent 72 degrees. So we all have this internal success mechanism that we have in our bodies that allow us to move forward towards what we want. We have to set the thermostat for what it is that we really want. Now, you can write it down. You can put it on your mirror. You can create declarations and affirmations, and you can repeat them, and you can use positive thinking all you want, which is all powerful and, again, creates the momentum and the energy. But if you haven't reached that part of your brain, the unconscious part of your brain and your body, with a realistic picture of what that looks like so it knows exactly what it is that you want to achieve, exactly what it looks like, exactly what it feels like, then it doesn't know. It's not sure. You've got this idea, I want to drive a Ferrari. I've gone in 6 months, I'm going to own a Ferrari. You know, well, what does that really look like? What does it feel like? What does it sound like? The more vivid and real you can create your internal representation, the more clear your unconscious mind becomes on what it is that you intend to achieve. Not want to achieve, but will intend to achieve. And then all of a sudden, that internal thermostat becomes set. That servo mechanism starts to move you like a rocket towards what it is that you want, almost unconsciously. It's interesting, Wes, that, you know, I talk about this often in my live trainings, is that, you know, how is it possible that some of the great achievers like Tony Robbins, like Schwarzenegger, like Donald Trump, I mean, there's so many others that we could talk about. How is it that they always seem to be able to identify and access the resources needed to achieve what it is that they want? They never miss the opportunities. Well, number one, the opportunities have been presented to them. But we're all presented with opportunities. We're all presented with ways of creating what we want. But we miss those opportunities. We overlook them. We underestimate them. Because we haven't set that thermostat in our mind to identify exactly what it is that we want so that, boom, all of a sudden, anything, I mean, just out of the corner of your eye, you might see something. And I may be metaphorically speaking, but out of the corner of your eye, you see something that represents a resource and something that'll move you faster towards your goal. And instead of overlooking it or underestimating it, boom, your head turns to it immediately. You get it, you grab it, you hold it, and you use it as momentum to move you forward. If you don't reset that thermostat through visualization, then you miss those opportunities. You miss those key critical components in moving towards what it is that you want. So visualization is a critical key. Arnold's used it. Dare I say, Tiger Woods has used it. I've used it in my career, and I'm going out on a limb, but I guess that you've used visualization in one way or another in your career as well, Wes. Is that true?
Yeah, I continually see that Shelby Cobra parked in the garage, and it's been there for 20 years, but I just haven't gotten there yet. So that's the one thing that I've always wanted.
There may be something to the idea that it's parked in your garage for the last 20 years. Maybe what you need to do is start creating this visual, emotional component of driving that car with your hair blowing, if you've got any. I'm running short myself. The top down, your wife sitting next to you, you're driving, and maybe you're out in California on Highway 1. Create something that's an emotion. Dig deeper in terms of what your drivers are in achieving that goal. Parked in the garage, looking at it, admiring it, was fantastic. I did that for Harleys for years. And then I began to see myself driving on the highways in California and in Colorado, and before I knew it, I was able to achieve it. Of course, I planned for it as well. Let me do this, Wes. Let me give something to you I think that you'll enjoy and benefit from, but also for your listeners as well. It's a visualization process. It's a 40-minute audio that I've created that will take you through the process, the relaxation stage of the process, so that you can access your unconscious mind and begin to create the vision that you want and make it very real. And then also, there's a component to this that takes it a step further. And in neurolinguistic programming, which I do, and I've also learned a good deal about, and I'm a practitioner of what's called timeline therapy. Now, it's not therapy in the classic sense, but what it does is it allows you to create this very real tactile aspect of how you store time. In other words, where's the future for you? Is it in front of you, alongside you, is it behind you, whatever it might be, however you store time, and we do store time, or we wouldn't know the difference between yesterday and today, between last month and next month. We store time in our unconscious mind and in our body. So timeline therapy allows you to access that and then literally implant your goal, your vision, your internal representation for what you want in the exact date that you intend to achieve it. Because that's the other thing, Wes. However long it's been that you visualize that Colby in the garage is not enough. You've got to say, on this date, this is when I will achieve it, and here's the plan I'm going to create to do it. So the visualization with timeline therapy aspect allows you to implant it into the future. And again, your unconscious mind starts to move towards it automatically like a servo mechanism. You don't have to think about it. The URL is tinyurl.com/IRvision. tinyurl.com/IRvision. And that will take you to an opt-in page. You're going to learn a little bit more about the visualization process, the audio, and you get a chance to take a look at my book as well, The 7 Rules of Achievement. The IR process works great with the rules of the book, The 7 Rules. It's like a component of it. You don't need it, but the visualization process will work on its own, so I want you to have that audio. tinyurl.com/IRvision, and start to put visualization into practice on a regular basis, and holy mackerel, you will not believe the results, the things that start to present themselves and appear in your life as resources and your ability to achieve what you want.
You know, we're all afraid of something, Tom, you know, and I was nervous. This could be the first time I was talking with you and interviewing you, something that I hadn't had to deal with for a while because this was the first time that I was actually speaking to someone who I admired and followed and looked up to for a while. I guess you could say while I was, you know, growing up, although you're not much older than I am, you just already had reached a level where I wanted to be, and I was just following your lead. So I've heard, you know, false evidence becoming real, and that's great. But in real life, how do we overcome these fears? And how can someone make the leap from fear to where you want to be in your life?
I still enjoy that description. I know Tony Robbins has used it on several occasions, is, you know, fear being the false evidence appearing real. The definition that I prefer is the anticipation of pain. Fear is indeed the anticipation of pain. And if you think about it, fear isn't necessarily in the present moment. It's not now. We're experiencing it now. But what we fear is almost always in the future. It's the anticipation of fear or loss or humiliation, something of that nature. And anticipation is indeed in the future. So we need to realize that, number one, what's going on in terms of the fear is really something that we're creating ourselves. We create it. We anticipate something that's going to happen a certain way. And a big part of that goes right back to what we talked about in terms of visualization. See, most of us still exercise our imagination, but we do so in a way that we imagine the worst case scenario. And I believe me, I did this for years, man. You know, where you just, you know, you're going in for a job interview and you imagine the worst case scenario. Oh my God, I'm going to slip. I'm going to look like an idiot. I'll pee my pants. I can't do it. You know, and you just, you manage to get through it, but you've got all this fear and anxiety built up around it. You know, when I first started speaking on the stage, getting in front of an audience, it was like, oh my God, it was terrifying. I knew I had to do it because it was part of what I wanted to achieve, and I knew it was part of the process, so I had to do it, but I was terrified of it. And a big part of that terror came from the anticipation. I'm going to look like a fool, that I'm not going to be able to answer the questions. I'm going to stutter. I'm going to forget what I'm supposed to say. You know, I think it was Seinfeld that said it best, most people would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. And that's kind of what I was manifesting. So the idea is first to understand, to change anything, the first step is to identify. You got to first identify, what is this fear? Is it real? Is it something I'm imagining? This is the logical components, the logical steps to it. What exactly is the fear? What's the worst case scenario? And understanding what that is. Now, we talked about it earlier, and fear and temptation. I still refer to that as the dragon, because the dragon will show up as soon as you want to make a change, as soon as you want to make progress, as soon as you want to step forward in your life and do something new, as soon as you want to do something new and different and challenging. It represents to the dragon, it represents to the temptation, to the fear, to the ego, the part of the ego that just simply cannot deal with change. It represents to that part of the ego that we call the dragon, the loss of self, the loss of who it's identified as its being, who it is. It's this, I'm this fat person, and who would I be if I don't bitch and moan about being fat all the time? Who am I going to be about if I'm not this guy who's always getting drunk or using drugs? Or who am I going to be if I'm not this guy who's always broke? So the idea of change will always be accompanied by fear. Always, because the dragon shows up, the part of the ego that doesn't want you to change. So it suddenly shows up, and as I said earlier, it will tell you anything you need to hear to keep you from moving forward. And it creates all sorts of anticipation about what that's going to look and feel like. You know, if we only exercised our imagination and our ability to visualize in a positive way in terms of what the positive outcome that we want, as opposed to this idea of failure, we would be massively successful in our lives, all of us. So the first step in overcoming fear is to identify. First, what is it? Is it real? Sit back, take a deep breath. No, I'm just anticipating some pain, some humiliation, some disappointment, whatever it might be. So now you take a deep breath, you center yourself back into your body, reconnect with your body again, and then begin the process, because this is where the practice comes in, by the way. The more you visualize, the more you create, or the deeper the neural pathways that you've created based on your positive visualization process of what it is that you want, what the positive outcome looks like. You mentioned it earlier, the collegiate women's basketball team, where they tested those who just visualized doing free throws versus those who actually got out there and threw free throws. And there was a nominal difference. It's like a tenth of a percent difference in terms of the improvement level. And that's because those women that were visualizing shooting those free throws did it perfectly every single time in their mind. The ones that were practicing on the court, well, they missed a few. And therefore, the neural pathway kept building that you miss a few. Maybe I get 8 out of 10. That'd be great. But if we practice consistently visualizing the results we want, it becomes easier and easier when you're going for a job, when you're walking up to and approaching someone of the opposite sex, when you're walking into a gym to achieve what it is that you want. Now, all of a sudden, you realize the moment you walk into the gym that you got a freaking squat today. Holy shit, man. I want to get onto that bar. That can cause some fear because the anticipation that it's going to be painful. But if you've got this vision in your mind that you're this powerful monster in the gym, that you can handle anything that comes your way, and you've already got that, then all of a sudden when that fear shows up, you just say, thank you. Or as my friend Harbecker likes to say, thank you for sharing. And then you go back into the process of visualizing the positive effects, the ultimate outcome, the goal that you want to achieve, whatever that might be, the relationship, the money, whatever it might be. Wherever the fear comes up, you need to have a model of what that looks like in the positive. What's the goal? What's the achievement? What's the outcome that you do want? If you haven't created that, then the fear will get a hold of you. The dragon will stop you. It'll pull you back and even keep you from wanting to try. Of course, the other way to overcome fear, too, is the do, then believe model. Every time you face fear, if you step forward like a warrior and you take action anyway, then all of a sudden you become stronger. You develop more emotional muscle than you ever thought possible. Your heart becomes stronger. You know, hey, I've been here before. I've faced fear before, and I've stepped through it, and I achieved what I wanted. And even if you fell short, it doesn't matter. You built the muscle strength, the internal strength of stepping forward in that fear. First is to identify it. Number one, it's you creating it. It doesn't really exist. It's not in the present moment. It's the anticipation. It's the future. The second thing is to make sure that you have in your mind already, and you can rehearse this no matter what it is you're facing that's bringing up the fear. You can rehearse in advance what the positive outcome it is that you want. What is it you do want? If that's the fear, if that's the worst-case scenario, what's the best-case scenario? And repeat it again and again and again and again and again 1,000 times until you've got a neural pathway for what it is that you want. So now when that fear shows up, you can say, thank you for sharing, and you turn the other direction, and you face what it is that you want, and you start to create that vision. You bring it up again, bring it up again. And there's ways of anchoring that. We won't get into that today, but there's ways of anchoring that into your physiology as well. And the third, of course, the stopgap, is face the freaking fear and do it anyway. Those are the only real things that I know of for identifying the fear and taking action and overcoming, because everyone can be stopped by fear if we allow ourselves to be. But we've got to overcome it.
You've made a successful transition from the world of bodybuilding into the world of fitness and now into the self-help and motivation field. So did you want to add anything to this discussion before we say goodbye?
Wow, I think we've probably covered I can develop a little verbal diarrhea, and I apologize if I went a little long on some of the stuff, but I wanted to share as much as I could with your listeners and serve you guys on this call as much as possible. I guess the only thing that I would share would be, number one, believe in yourself. I mean, no different than when Ben Ma, when he broke that gap between what was possible and what wasn't possible, and he broke the four-minute mile, and achieve something that everyone believed was impossible, couldn't be done. A human being couldn't do it. And he did it. He did it based on his belief. He knew he could. He believed it was possible. If you believe what it is that you want to accomplish is possible, and you leave no stone unturned in achieving it, then you can do it, man. You can take that giant leap of faith in your life. Connect with your body. Create body rapport. Be brutally honest with yourself. Face the temptation, face the fear, create a visualization for what you want, and then take that leap of faith, create the life that you truly want and deserve. You deserve more than you have, and even more than that, and even more than that. And when you get to that next level, you're going to be able to serve so many other people, including myself, including Wes. Get out there and inspire. I hope you'll read the book, 7 Rules of Achievement, and I'd love to stay in touch, and I hope I get a chance to share more with you and be inspired by you as well down the road.
Thank you, Tom.
My pleasure.
That's the end of this interview with Tom Terwilliger. I hope you got a little inside look at what a great guy Tom really is. And you've heard it several times throughout this interview, but if you want to order his book, just go to 7rulesofachievement.com.